everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and joining me tonight for one of our F Everything shows is Doug.
Hey, Patrick, thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Doug.
I am so happy to be here.
I am happy that you are here as well. We have not done one of these F Everything shows, I think, since before F This Movie Fest in February. Does that sound right?
Wow, it's been a long time, and that would make sense. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's fun to be back doing a show like this with no single movie format. We just get to talk about whatevs.
I guess the warning to those who really expect, like, a deep cinematic conversation is, hey, you might want to skip this one because we're going to talk about butt. This is everything about the butt, is what I'm saying, with two T's.
Hey, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. And you can like us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/fthismovie. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. And you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com or find us in the iTunes store by searching Kick-Ass Movie Podcast. And F This Movie comes up. It's pretty neat. Doug, listen, you guys.
I'm here.
He's catching 40 winks.
No, I'm not sleeping.
Okay, but you sounded like you were sleeping. You're not?
No, the Sandman didn't come and visit me.
So that's all of our nonsense ways to find us. Hopefully this isn't the first show you've ever heard, but if it is, welcome.
Yeah, welcome. You're in for a treat.
We don't always sleep through the first 3 minutes of the show.
Has the show really been on for 3 minutes? Come on, be honest. I would say 37 seconds.
Hey, do you know, we're in July now, which means A, happy 4th of July, everyone.
Wait, time out. Patrick is doing one of those, like, showbiz things because we're technically, he and I, like, in real time are in June, but when the show drops, I'm using vigorous finger quotes.
Hey.
It will be July. And that is, you're blowing my mind.
Hey,
I'm blowing
Sam
the fourth
Mendes,
wall.
Way to pull back the curtain on Suburbia, you dick.
No, it's July, totally. Happy birthday, America. Hope
you
like movie podcasts.
Hey, listen, happy 4th of July, everyone. It's July now. The year is officially half over, 6 months behind us. Summer is now half over and has kind of sucked so far. But more importantly, June exploitation is over. 30 days of exploitation movies at F This Movie, which so many of you were kind enough to join us in watching. I had a lot of fun. It was challenging. It's challenging to find the time to watch a movie every day, in addition to, like, having to watch other stuff that I have to review for other jobs or even for this movie. Like, so it can be a challenge, but it was a lot of fun. I hope everybody had a good time.
I don't use the word unmitigated, and I don't know what the word unmitigated means, but I would say Junesploitation was an unmitigated success. I think that last year was a kind of a
mitigated template success.
It was totally mitigated. Last year was an introductory template called 30 Stars of Summer. And I think that given how new we were to the podcast world and how our fan base was awesome but smaller, it was interesting. And I think I had fun doing it, but I know a lot of people were kind of like, oh, man, this is rough and this is tough. And this year we switched things up a bit, went with the exploitation theme stuff. And I think that it really – the spectrum and the breadth and the width and the depth of the movie choices available to us. Like, you kind of can watch almost anything, and I think it helped bring people in. I had a fun time doing it. I probably did. I didn't do every day, unfortunately. I've got some stupid work night commitments and crap like that, but I know Patrick did. And I'm saying Patrick to you. I guess I should say you did.
Talk about me like I'm not here. It's cool. My ears are burning. Seriously, my headphones are getting really hot.
I had a lot of fun. I saw a ton of stuff, just like last year. I saw a ton of stuff I had not seen before, and I'm really glad I did it. I probably did about 75% of it, and I did one today too, which I'll write about either after this podcast or tomorrow morning. That's kind of my thing. I'm the one guy that waits the next day to post the review.
Well, listen, it gives a little bump the following morning. It shows up again in the recent comments. Here's the thing. I mean, I probably had more fun with Junesploitation than I did with 30 Stars of Summer, which is not a knock on 30 Stars of Summer. My feeling last year was like, oh, I end up watching all this bad stuff because, like, I have to find a Whoopi Goldberg movie. And
You know, if I were you, there's a finger to point at the person to blame for this.
Listen,
I would hold them accountable.
I do, but the thing is, like, if there was ever a Whoopi Goldberg movie that I wanted to see, like, I probably saw it. And the Whoopi Goldberg movies I haven't seen, it wasn't because, like, oh, I haven't gotten around to seeing this yet. I made a choice to avoid seeing Eddie until 30 Stars of Summer. And now I know what it's like when she coaches the Knicks.
You haven't seen my Star Trek fan fiction movie just titled Guinan, have you? Because that would qualify for the Whoopi Goldberg.
She was in the Nexus. I had some of the same problems, though, with Junesploitation, which is a lot of the kind of exploitation-y movies. And I thought it was interesting that we had kind of opened it up at the start of the month to say, you don't have to watch an exploitation movie. You can watch any movie. You know, one day the theme is cars, and you can just watch any movie that, you know, think qualifies as a car movie. It doesn't have to be an exploitation movie. For the most part, I feel like everybody kind of, in the spirit of the thing, stuck to basically exploitation movies. My problem was, I've seen a lot of them, and if there's one that I wanted to see, chances are I saw it. So I ended up watching a lot of, like, the garbage exploitation movies.
This is Patrick's way. This is your way of humble bragging about, like, guys, I've seen so many movies,
and
I love
exploitation,
and I swear it's not. Wait, what are we talking about?
I don't even do humble bragging. What I do is called humble humbling, where I'm very humble about how much I'm
being,
like,
humble.
Yeah, totally. That didn't. I thought, like, I was going to go somewhere with that, and I didn't.
The first day of Junesploitation, I actually watched two car movies, because not only was one day car movies, the first day was car movies.
Now who's the humble bragger?
I know, right? I watched two movies in one day. I'm a king. I watched Grand Theft Auto, Ron Howard's first movie, and Senna, a documentary about Formula One. And Senna is obvious. It's definitely not in the exploitation mode, if you will. But it really, I'm glad I watched it. And it was kind of an excuse to watch it. And likewise today, or I'm sorry, oops, not today. Yeah. The last day of June.
Back in June.
It's post-apocalyptic. And I'm stretching post-apocalyptic. I know there are purists out there who take issue with, there's either movies about the end of the world and the world after, or movies just about the future. And I know there's people that you can't mix those two worlds. I don't know where Dredd falls in, the remake of Judge Dredd, but I watched Dredd today in the last day of June.
I would argue that qualifies.
By the way, this is my review, which I will not type. Maybe I will type it because I'm super lazy, but this is my review of Judge Dredd. Ready?
Just Dredd.
No.
Judge Dredd.
Wait, no, Dredd. Dredd. I saw Dredd.
Sorry. Oh, I thought you were going to do Judge Dredd and you were going to bust out your Armand DeSante.
No. No, here's my review just of Dredd.
All right.
I'm calling it The Raid Dreddemption.
Nice. That's very good.
I was so proud of you. Because I'm like, oh, they're just in this hotel block trying to get out, huh?
Yeah.
He's a judge, huh?
Kind of a similar plot line. I kind of liked
Raid Dreddemption.
I kind of liked Dredd. I thought it was entertaining. Yeah.
I liked it fine.
How crazy violent it was. My big objection to the movie was, I don't want to get into spoilers, but the thing that happens at the end would be super cool. The way that sort of the main bad guy is dispatched, spoilers, the main bad guy dies, is dispatched, would be way cooler if they didn't do the exact same thing at the beginning of the movie, because now it's just a repeat. You know what I mean? They show.
I don't know if I agree with that. I know what you're saying, and this is such a kind of a sticky wicket, because we're obviously the thing we're kind of taking issue with. Yeah, that's right. I'm bringing weird expressions to F this movie.
That's what I call it when I come on an Ewok.
which,
by the way, is a lot.
I was going to say, heads up, F-heads. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
But
I nub-nub all over his fur. Yub-nub. Is it Yub-nub? What's the song? I can't remember.
You know, I am a purist.
You only watch the special editions. And,
the special editions, so I know the new song, which I can't even for the life of me remember what that might be. That's really funny, and I can't even take this anywhere else. So let's leave it at that, and
let's go back to arguing about Dredd.
Dredd is good, but the thing we're arguing about, I don't have a problem with that whatsoever, because I think in the kind of screenwriting 101, it's the callback to this, you know?
Yeah, I guess my objection, because it takes such a long time, which I think is because they wanted to show off a lot of cool 3D stuff. It goes on for a really long time, and I felt like that would be more forgivable if it wasn't repeating the exact same sequence that we saw at the beginning of the movie. It's a neat idea, but I just need to do it twice.
You're totally right that they're just kind of like, you know, it's filmmaking masturbation. Like, look at all these cool things we can do.
You had me at, you're totally right.
You're totally right.
Thank you. Wow. That
anyway, so I saw Dread, and aside from my awesome little play on words with the title,
got it.
I did like it. It was at first I thought it was comical and cartoonish, and funny enough, like we've talked. I think you've talked about this movie maybe three times before on the podcast. I want to say the Fifth Element podcast and. Maybe an F Everything podcast, you had seen it and had talked about it. So this is just going over old territory, so I apologize. But I just saw it today for post-apocalyptic whatever, and I liked it.
Good. Have you seen anything else good lately?
Last night, I don't know why, I saw Minority Report.
All right.
I don't know why I start laughing after I say things that are very, very serious.
Was it on TV and you were just like, hey, this is on, I'm going to leave it. Or were you like, I'm going to stand up, walk over to my DVD shelf, select Minority Report and put it on?
The latter. I'm
get out of town.
Yeah, I am not. No, I will not get out of town. F town. That's the town for F heads in of this movie. I was jonesing for it. I cannot explain this. I do not understand why I wanted to see this movie so badly. The other day, I briefly saw maybe 15, 20 minutes of Blade Runner, and I was in the mood for like a sci-fi movie. And oftentimes, and you know, we've talked about this before. I've mentioned this before on the show that I like the tech I like in movies I like technology, and I like how like people's visions of the future, and for whatever reason it stuck in my brain was kind of like the vision of the future that Spielberg created for Minority Report.
Pre-crime.
And I had not seen pre-crime. I mean, yes, pre-crime, but all the kind of just the very small things like how the cars drive and like their technology. I
and
had
like
not seen
the pre-crime
movie.
And like the precogs with the pre-crime man
and all my pre-cum. I had not seen this movie in a long time, and I briefly listened. By the way, I would recommend you listen to 2010's episode of F This Movie, Minority Report,
2010.
Featuring Patrick Bromley and Mike Pomero.
Do we sound like babies?
They're like, Ingu, I like this Goo Goo movie. That's, by the way, that's
and then we poo in our pants. Because
that's what my baby says.
That's what Mike does. Sounds. I don't ever do that. But Mike.
No, that would be weird, right?
Constantly.
Unless you do it. I mean, that is not weird. Wait, are you saying you do it? No, that's weird then. I think that's totally Mike. He's so weird. Mike and Patrick recorded a podcast on Minority Report, and I listened to it today when I was cleaning. That's right. I'm the cleaning man. And I'm the cleaner. I'm Paka. And I didn't know – I was nervous because I'm like – my reaction to the movie after watching it for the first time in a long time was like, oh, this is not very good. And I was kind of glad to see that in the podcast you and Mike were also like, no, this doesn't really hold up. I think one of Mike's issues was he liked it a lot when it first came out. He rewatched it and was interrupted for some reason, and then didn't want to go back to it. He eventually did, obviously, for the purposes of the show. And then you – always took issue with how the Philip K. Dick ideas presented are very interesting, but it's more interested in being a Hitchcockian kind of crime thriller.
Right.
And I take issue with lots of things, including sticks and jetpacks and a lot of the stupid, like, well, this makes absolutely no sense.
But so. You just said that was the stuff that you like. You like all the tech stuff.
You know, it's so – I did say that. But
yeah.
Some of the things I knew I didn't like even back in 2002, 2001? I'm not sure when this came out.
Not either.
But six sticks were always really, really dumb. And when you really start to break them down, like, why would a cop hold a baton that when he touches a person makes the person puke all over them? And then he has to arrest them. It's just the dumbest thing in the world. That's like, I really think that they came up with the six stick title and like worked backwards. Like, what do you call them? I don't know. Death sticks. Oh, sorry. That's taken. That's in the Phantom Menace. So it's not very good. And I find it so fascinating. Again, my weird kind of obsession with technology in movies And I love to see how people envision what the future might be. I find it so interesting that in any sort of past movie about the future, everything is a thing, meaning they're always touching things and playing with things and using a lot of energy to move things around. Even if it's a virtual reality, they're still utilizing. And I'm thinking the future, if anything, is all just going to be like blinking your eye and sitting in a chair like the humans in Wall-E.
Right.
You know, like that they're just in mobile chairs. They're not moving and they're controlling stuff with their brain. God knows how. And I just think it's so funny. You could be like a translucent disc and it's like, well, that's a little smaller than a DVD. So I guess the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard certainly to predict sort of the future and it dates things so badly. I remember thinking Minority Report.
Patrick, it's hard to predict the future to Cromley of this movie.
I just mean like even in Minority Report where they have little discs, it's like we've already moved on. We don't have physical media, you know.
Right.
I remember liking some of the stuff in Minority Report in terms of the ads that like kind of pop up everywhere. I thought that's probably not too far off, you know.
I think that's what's going to stick. That's the thing that we point to this movie and say, they got that right. And I guess apparently Steven Spielberg, picked the brains of some really smart people and said, like, give me a vision for the future that I can kind of storyboard and art direct. And he went from there. But I think that, yeah, especially with this whole NSA thing and the Edward Snowden thing, that's why – I think that's also part of why I wanted to watch it, because I remembered like, yeah, you walk off a train and there's a TV monitor there scanning your retina and it says, hey, Doug – the last time you watched, Butt Bongo Fiesta, you know, you're going to want to watch something even grosser and more disturbing involving urine. And I'm like, maybe you're right.
And you're like, wait a second. Was Cameron Crowe on that train?
He absolutely was. So was Cameron Diaz, by the way.
And supposedly Paul Thomas Anderson is somewhere as well, although I've never been able to spot him. But yeah, Cameron Crowe and Cameron Diaz I spot. The Camerons, as I call them.
It was made right after Vanilla Sky, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's way too much time on Minority Report because you have a whole show on Minority
Report. No such thing as too much time on Minority Report. A lot of people really love that movie. I don't mean to disparage it. I just always – it's one of those movies that I always want to like more than I do.
Yeah. No, it's – yeah, I don't know.
I watched Doomsday for Post-Apocalyptic Day, and that's another movie that I always want to like more than I do. Like, what a great idea. It's a mashup.
Refresh my memory.
Doomsday is the Neil Marshall movie from maybe 2008 where it's Rona Mitra, your favorite actress. And I was going to try and find some other way of saying that, and then I just went with the fact. She's basically like playing Snake Plissken. Like she has an eye patch, and they close off part of the city because a plague infects half the population, and then she has to go back into the plague-infested, cannibal-infested, like, apocalyptic wasteland to try and find a cure. And part of it is the Road Warrior, and part of it is Knight Riders. It's just this mashup of every, even the font they borrow from John Carpenter. Like, he really just mashes up all these sort of 80s science fiction things. And that seems like such a great idea, and I want to love it. And every time I only kind of like it.
That's so funny. Like, you want to love it, so you'll watch it again and just like it the same. And then you're like, maybe this time's the charm.
Cherry 7-Up.
I'm mad at myself. Do you have to give that? I get that reference. But yeah. For the listeners, Patrick does not like Cherry 7-Up, but he'll try it once a year to tell himself, I should probably like this, and invariably does not like Cherry 7-Up. I am mad at myself right now because we should all be watching Cyborg. Why are we even messing around with other post-apocalyptic movies when Cyborg exists?
You make a good point. I even own the Cyborg director's cut, which is just called Slinger. I could have watched that.
I don't know why I like that movie, that title more, but I do. Because probably Slinger. Because there's no cyborgs in Cyborg?
There is a cyborg in Cyborg.
Which cyborg
Pearl,
are you cyborging?
Pearl Prophet is a cyborg.
Oh, Cyborg Prophet, Sir Barbara?
Yeah, Pearl Prophet, Cyborg Slinger. Anything else that you've seen lately that you want to talk about?
Everything I've seen has been for Junesploitation. I've seen a lot of stuff, and I'm really happy. And I guess just to recap the month, I saw a lot of Jack Hill movies, and I could not be happier about that. My introduction, believe it or not, to Jack Hill was last October's Scary Movie Month, or I'm sorry, The Massacre, which is in Scary Movie Month, where it's 24 hours of horror movies, and he was there. I met him without even knowing who he was, really, aside from you telling me, like, Doug, shut the fuck up. That's the guy that did Switchblade Sisters, bruh. And you got your poster signed and you met him. I think we have video of him and pictures of him. And we saw Spider Baby, which a lot of people actually watched this Junesploitation also. And it's a great little movie. I saw Coffee. I saw The Big Birdcage. I saw Foxy Brown. Weirdly enough, Foxy Brown is probably my least favorite of – oh, and I also saw Switchblade Sisters for the first time. Foxy Brown is fine, but it also was like, I don't know, Coffee gets it right.
Yeah.
So came out before Foxy Brown, and I just am totally like blown away by Coffee. So I'm like, oh, Foxy Brown, be more like Coffee.
What was Coffee your favorite of the Jack Hill movies you saw?
Yeah, definitely. Coffee was my favorite. Probably followed, believe it or not, I cannot explain this, by The Big Birdcage. That movie is insane.
Blasphemy. It is insane, yeah.
I know you love Switchblade Sisters, and actually my wife saw it too, and she liked it a lot. She's like, I'm glad of all the movies that you watch, because she would be in and out of the room as I watch movies. She's like, I'm glad of all the movies you watched, kind of giving me a backhanded compliment that I saw a lot of shit. She's like, I'm glad I saw Switchblade Sisters, because she liked it a lot too. Switchblade Sisters is great, but The Big Birdcage I just thought was insane. Like, who are these people? It's a women's prison. None of it makes any sense. And I think that's even Jack Hill has admitted as much. Like, there's prisoners in hot pants in the Philippines with gay prison guards and Sid Haig doing the gayest stereotype impersonation ever. And it all somehow worked for me.
It's the movie that's always existed in your brain.
That now I don't have to make it.
I saw a couple of new releases, and by the time this podcast comes out, reviews of some of them will be up, so I won't go too in depth, but I saw The Heat, which if you go to facebook.com/fthismovie or just go to our Facebook page, there's a link to my review of that will be up.
I have read it, Patrick, but I forget it. So please tell me what you think of The Heat.
I actually liked The Heat. It's not a great movie at all. It's way too long, and Melissa McCarthy is pretty overexposed at this point. Her character is very repetitive. Like, we get it. You say fuck you to everyone, and then you threaten them. Mm. But I ended up liking the movie. I think it does a lot of things right. I think it does a lot of interesting kind of subtle character things. I think it's actually a really sort of feminist movie in the way that it doesn't really matter that they're women. It doesn't talk about really the fact that they're women. It's not dependent that they are women for it to work. And
it's Paul Feig, right?
Yeah. And I am obviously blinded by my love for Sandra Bullock. I liked it probably because I got to watch Sandra Bullock for 2 hours. And so I later on want to talk about some of our movie handicaps, because I end up handicapping this movie because A, I like Sandra Bullock. B, I like buddy cop movies. I'm just a fan of that genre. So even a shitty one like Cop Out, I'm like, it's not the worst.
Cause you like Taxi?
No.
Is that like a buddy Taxi. Cop movie? I don't even know.
It basically is. Jimmy Fallon's a cop, which is believable. And Queen Latifah drives a supercharged taxi, and they're on the trail of some Brazilian supermodel bank robbers led by Gisele Bündchen. It's not a very good movie.
So you're saying I need to see Taxi?
As soon as possible, or ASAP, as they say in the chat.
I think it was on HBO the other day.
Oh, you should have watched it.
Yeah, I know. But POS, parent over shoulder, if we're talking chat room lingo.
So those handicap my enjoyment of The Heat. But I've been seeing so many things this summer that I feel a little bit disappointed by. And I didn't feel disappointed by The Heat. It was what I wanted or slightly better.
Speaking of Sandra Bullock, I think she's adorable. I love her. I used to not think so. I used to think that she was just like every other actress out there, like a Reese Witherspoon, interchangeable is what I'm trying to get at. And going back and rewatching some of her older stuff, like Speed I saw recently and Demolition Man I try to watch as often as every time it's on. I can't turn it off because it's the best. Quick side note, I remember when Demolition Man came out, and Sylvester Stallone made that, and Judge Dredd, going back to the Dredd thread. What? And I got those two movies confused because I don't think I saw them until way later. And I didn't – I think I probably saw Judge Dredd first. I'm like, well, I don't like those movies. And you realize, no, Demolition Man knows what the fuck it's doing. Just like we know what we're doing. And it's Demolition Man is so great, and Sandra Bullock is so adorable, and that's one of the first. Isn't that like one of her earlier movies, right?
Demolition Man, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Aside from like that Amazon movie where she's like has makes love to a man in a darkened room.
Craig Sheffer, Fire on the Amazon, and she made Love Potion number 9, and she made When the Party's Over, and she was on the TV version of Working Girl. Like she had done some stuff.
You lost me at when you stopped talking about her making love to Craig Sheffer.
I, like you, went through a phase where I wasn't just uninterested in Sandra Bullock. I almost like downright disliked her. Speed comes out. You know, I love Lenina Huxley. I loved her in Speed. Loved her in Speed. While You Were Sleeping comes out. I love While You Were Sleeping. And then she goes on a tear of garbage movies like... In Love and War? Was that the name of the one? It's like her and Chris O'Donnell, and he's possibly playing Ernest Hemingway, or it's based on Ernest Hemingway. she made Hope Floats. She made that Dennis Leary one, Two If By Sea. She made just a bunch of movies that I thought were really terrible, and she became somebody who, if she was in a movie, I thought, well, I'm not going to see this. This is garbage.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then around 99, she was in... a movie called 28 Days, where she's like a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a great movie, but I liked the movie enough and I liked her so much in it that I started to reevaluate Sandra Bullock and fell back in love with her and have not fallen out of love with her, despite the occasional Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close or the occasional Miss Congeniality 2 Armed and Fabulous, which is a garbage movie.
Have you seen Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close?
I have vowed to probably never see that movie, which breaks my heart because here's a movie with Sandra Bullock and Tom Hanks in it, and I should want to see that movie. And there are very few movies that I just sort of swear off, but I feel as though that might be one.
You know, it's interesting. That came out recently, I think, during the tenure of At This Movie, and I think I even featured the trailer in a very popular column I like to call Watching Trailers with Doug. The Z is for Zabulous Trailers. And I was like, this is crazy because it's Tom Hanks and Sandra Bullock and it's like about 9/11. And it's start like the
how
kid,
can I it, masturbate it, to this?
It carries right. This isn't Fire in the Amazon territory. This is Hope Floats territory. But I still masturbated to Hope Floats because isn't what's his name? That crooner in Hope Floats?
Harry Connick Jr.
Michael Bublé
Jr. Time to kick
Jr.
the ties and light the fires.
Please, I know him better in Memphis Belle as the tail gunner who sings Danny Boy. I don't know why.
I know they're not talking about Harry Connick Jr.
I don't know what we're talking about. Sandra Bullock is the best.
The Heat. So we're back to The Heat. So I saw The Heat.
The Heat.
I liked it. I would actually recommend it if you have the same handicaps that I do. And as we know, no one is more handicapped than me.
I would see it because I like Bridesmaids and because – but it's funny because Melissa McCarthy is incredibly overexposed. And I want to touch upon something right now. I also saw Pitch Perfect, which was what I called the close enough clause of June'sploitation. It was my wife's birthday. She's like, let's watch Pitch Perfect. And I watched it for Rock and Roll Day. I know it's a stretch, but you know, bear with me. It wasn't very good. I didn't like it very much. I know a lot of people really, really like it. Most of them my nieces because that definitely appeals to 18, 19-year-old women because it's like about college and starring a young, very young Dane Cook, and that's all fine. I didn't like it, and I was in like choirs and stuff, and it's just like this is just complete fantasy bullshit. Like, I don't know, she wants to be a DJ. Like, I'm so sick of these movies, and maybe it's just me showing my age, but the reason I bring it up is because I wanted to talk about Rebel Wilson for a second. Rebel Wilson has shown herself to be capable of being very, very funny, but I have this weird theory about Rebel Wilson and I can't name another example right now just because my brain isn't working very much. But I feel like some people in the Rebel Wilson vein, maybe Melissa McCarthy falls into this category, maybe not. Maybe Zach Galifianakis falls in this category, although probably not because he's obviously proven himself to be a capable stand-up and he's funny. It's just that in The Hangover, he's pigeonholed to being the sweetly retarded, like, man-child idiot. I know Rebel Wilson's funny, and I even read like the trivia about Pitch Perfect, like that she kept the cast in stitches because she would constantly ad lib. I get the feeling that her confidence and her unique look are 90% of it. And the 10% is that she can make fun of herself and that she's able and capable of maybe finding a funny thing to say here and there. But I don't think that she's like the – again, maybe I'm just being weird about this movie, but I'm like watching her lines and I'm like, if every one of these lines is ad-libbed, which I know is not the case. Obviously, that's hyperbole from the trivia on IMDb. But I don't know what it is about her that is the funniest. I liked her a lot in Bridesmaids. I thought she was very funny in that.
Yeah.
I've liked her in other things that I've seen her in. And I'm watching Pitch Perfect. I'm like, you should not be knocking these out of the park. But it just, I don't know, something about her and that kind of character actor. I'm like, I'm wondering if we were just duped by the Hollywood system, not to sound totally douchey, into thinking that they're really funny because look at them. They're goofy looking and they have confidence and they have this swag or – I'm sorry, swagger. Or is it just that they're not that funny? I don't know.
I have so many things I want to say. I should point out that Melissa McCarthy, I had said that she's sort of one note, but – when she's not asked to just swear and be mean in The Heat, she actually has a few moments where she is doing some real acting where she sort of sneaks in this dramatic thing and she's really, really good. And those kinds of things are what make me like the movie more than I should. I'm not a Pitch Perfect fan. It was a movie that irritated me in the trailers. I didn't like the way they were trying to invent their own language and yeah. be real sassy, and we're the movie with attitude.
Oh, it's
and
Bring It On.
Also, sing. It's all the same problems I have with Bring It On. It is Bring It On 10 years
but
later.
But in Bring
absolutely.
It On, it's like it's the exact same plot. Like the senior left, and now the junior becomes a senior. She has to put together when it's like what?
And
like,
you have the boyfriend just, who's cool and quirky. Only instead of liking cool music because he has a Clash T-shirt, he loves movies. And he wants to write film scores, right? And
yeah, Breakfast Club is the thing that he points to and says the score in this is so great. And the, first of all, he's like, these are songs made by rock bands and whatever.
Yeah, the Breakfast Club doesn't have a score.
And then
I can't remember.
I don't know either. And he does do some trivia on like the song at the end, the Simple Minds song, whatever, that like launched them. But it's so funny because he like watch this movie. And then like when they meet cute, they separate, they get back together. During the separation, when she's thinking about getting back together, she watches it and she's crying because she's so moved by the fucking Breakfast Club. And the Breakfast Club is a great movie. And I love the Breakfast Club. But is anyone crying during the Breakfast Club?
Me. Anna Kendrick is sort of the only thing that saves Pitch Perfect. I didn't want to see Pitch Perfect. Like it, but I think okay. I like her, and so
I don't like her. I don't think. No, I think her 10 minutes are up. I think she's very much one note and very. I mean, she can definitely sing. I know I saw her on Letterman, and she was doing that whole cups thing, and she can sing, and obviously that's why she was. I mean, and she does have a cute look. She's a boy. She doesn't do it for me, and I'm kind of annoyed by her. And another point about this movie, and I know I'm interrupting you,
no,
I apologize, is that she's kind of a not despicable, that's too harsh, but she's like an unhappy person who's not very nice to everyone around her. And everyone around her is like, wants to get to know her. I'm like, this, you need to make her endearing, or you need to give her some characteristic that people like. Why would this boy, Dane Cook, want to be with her when she's just like an asshole to him constantly?
Right.
She's an asshole in the movie.
Yeah.
Until the very end where she's like, I want to make this work, guys.
Rebel Wilson, I agree with you. She has one sort of shtick, and unfortunately Hollywood is the kind of place where they see you do one thing, and if you do it sort of effectively, they just want you to keep doing that one thing. So she keeps getting cast in the Rebel Wilson role. The problem, I think, with Pitch Perfect is that the movie – I agree. She's not that funny, although I think the fans of the movie would disagree because I'm pretty sure her every line really lands for the people that love this movie.
Yeah.
The movie leans on her so heavily to be the comic relief, and so every time she talks and it's not that funny, but we know that that's the placeholder for a funny line, it stands out to us.
That's so true. Just like we're trained to think this is the joke.
Right. And it's always the same joke that she's sort of making. I actually thought the girl who just mumbles weird non sequiturs was a little bit funnier, even though that's the same joke every time that she's saying something really dark that they don't understand. I'm not a fan of that movie.
No, I'm not either. I guess that was my little. Yeah.
I also saw White House Down, which I won't.
That's a buddy cop movie.
Sort of. I won't really go into it because there should be a review of it up at fthismovie.net.
No, it's great. I loved you reading about it. I appreciate you.
I was really excited for White House Down because I like Channing Tatum, and despite the fact that I dislike a lot of his movies, I kind of like Roland Emmerich. There's a weird goofiness. He's like Michael Bay without all the hatred. And I like Die Hard, and this movie is just ripping off Die Hard. So there were all these things that I thought the movie had going for it. I thought it was.
You especially love Live Free or Die Hard, right? I mean, that's what you're telling me.
That's the good one. No. Sorry. A Good Day to Die Hard is Die Hard.
Incorrect. They're all good.
I wanted to like the movie. I did not. It was just too stupid, and it's stupid in such a crazy, specific sort of Roland Emmerich-y way. And when it's 2012, for some reason, I can just roll with it, maybe because I don't care at all, and I didn't want to like 2012, and so the fact that it's just so ridiculous, I can kind of be on board with, and the girl doesn't wear pull-ups, and it's great. Yeah. White House Down is just so stupid, and the moments that it builds to, I would almost recommend seeing the movie because it I talk about this in the review, but there's a scene in this movie that is the dumbest thing I've seen in a movie all year. And it's really earned in the movie. The way they build up to it is crazy.
Okay. Did you see Olympus Has Fallen?
I have not seen Olympus Has Fallen. Okay. And
I know Adam Riske had, he wrote about it for the site.
Yeah.
I just was curious to see if like what, I mean, they're obviously they're the same movie.
But, yeah. And I thought
it told in different ways.
I thought at the time that I was making the right call. I thought, well, I'll just wait for the other one that should be better. But I maybe was wrong. Maybe I should have gone for the scrappy underdog. Maybe I should have, I don't know. So White House Down was a disappointment. And remind me to get back to White House Down because there's something I want to talk about.
When do you want to get, like now?
Like a couple minutes. I'm going to finish talking about what I've seen. And I saw The Guilt Trip. Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand.
Okay, that came out a while ago, right?
It came out last Christmas, I believe.
Okay.
I remember JB seeing it and saying he thought it was better than he expected. Adam Riske has been saying that he thinks it's better than its reputation. I would agree with both of those assessments. It seems on paper and possibly from the trailers like such a stupid movie where we have Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand sort of as the Jewish stereotype of a mom who's just nagging her son. And, oh, they have to go on a car trip together. It's the guilt trip. Get it? And they get into wacky adventures. She gets drunk in a bar. They go to a strip club. It's
hold on. I just got that.
There's so much that should have been so bad in like a meet the parents way about it. And there's a little bit. There's a little bit of that, but for the most part, it's just sort of this very understated character movie about two people. It's never broad. It doesn't go for big, stupid laughs at all.
Anyone drink their own pee?
It's not just me as I watch it. It's not like a really funny movie. So it's weird. I don't know how to classify it because it's not a drama, although it has dramatic moments. It's a comedy, I suppose, but I don't know that I ever laughed except for maybe some of Seth Rogen's throwaway lines. But sure, it's just sort of a nice movie that you like because it means well and it's well acted. And I'm a big, big
what inspired you to watch it aside from like the fact that Adam had seen it? Like what?
I really like Seth Rogen.
Okay. I guess you're on the high of this is the end. Yeah.
And this was a movie where he plays a lead that I hadn't seen. And okay. I was curious to see.
I know
he's
got great stories. Yeah. When he was with Barbara Streisand, he would talk about how she's obviously seen it all and has met everyone. And so he'd talk about how in the car, like they're in the car for 12 hours a day, every day. That's like, or not, maybe not that long, but like in between takes, like tell me a story. And she would. And she was pretty game to like, you know, be friendly with him. So that's cool.
Yeah. I think he said they only shot like 8 to 10 hours a day, and it was only during daytime. Like, they didn't do night shoots, and Barbra Streisand had all these things that she could demand, and they did. You know, they sort of went along with it.
He even said too, like, he's like, because someone, I think it was on Howard Stern, he's like, well, what do you think of that? And he's like, that was great. Are you kidding? Like, I wasn't the bad guy, but I got to enjoy all the her crazy demands. Like,
yeah, right.
You can only shoot in Malibu. It's like, Sham, that's fine with me.
And the last movie I'll talk about is that I rewatched Chillerama.
Okay.
Which is a horror anthology that came out a couple years ago, and I had reviewed it for the site. The reason I watched it is because I've been watching the new season of Holliston, which is the sitcom on FearNet that's written and directed by – why are you laughing?
I'm sorry. This sentence is the best. Go on. Keep going with it.
Adam Green
on FearNet. Like, Adam, these are things that
I don't get FearNet. My cable provider doesn't have FearNet, but I get FearNet on demand. If that,
I can watch
stuff after the fact, but not while it airs. I don't know really what's on FearNet except for Holliston. Adam Green, who wrote and directed the Hatchet movies and Frozen, created his own sitcom called Holliston, and it's about him and Joe Lynch, who's another director, living in Holliston, playing sort of fictional versions of themselves as
what,
like,
is Holliston, by the way?
Holliston is the name of a town in Massachusetts, I think.
Okay.
It's where they live. So it's just sort of a hangout show. It's the two of them and these two girls, and it has a lot of problems, but I enjoy it, and I feel like it's come a long way. It's now in its second season on FearNet. So I've been watching that, and they started a podcast together, the two of them, Adam Green and Joe Lynch, and I've really been enjoying their podcast a lot. I really like both of them, and I like listening to them talk and tell stories. So I thought I would give Chillerama another chance, because each of them directs a segment in Chillerama, and it's on Netflix Instant, and unfortunately my feelings about Chillerama are sort of the same as they were, which is it's four segments. Two of them are decent. One is okay. And one is so bad that it makes the whole movie hard to get through. And luckily,
is that one that's so bad directed by one of them?
No. It's directed by a guy named Tim Sullivan. And it's called I Was a Teenage Werebear. And it has interesting ideas where it's doing sort of the Rebel Without a Cause movie and the sort of beach party musical of the, you know, late 50s, early 60s.
Beach party tonight.
Vacation is here. But it's doing it all with this whole gay storyline. It's an interesting idea, but it's so bad that it really is. If I didn't know that the two segments that were coming are better, I would turn it off, you know, having seen it already. Right. I'm like, well, I can stick around and wait for Adam Green and Joe Lynch's pieces, because it's really hard to get through. And it's like, I think I Was a Teenage Werebear is the longest one of the bunch.
I hate you even saying that title.
I Was a Teenage Werebear.
I hate it so much.
The first segment is from Adam Rifkin, who directed The Chase with Charlie Sheen and Christy Swanson.
Okay.
And Detroit Rock City. And it's called Wadzilla, and it's about a giant sperm that attacks New York.
That's also horrible.
Anyway, I unfortunately
I feel
can't.
Comfortable. Like, I am judge, jury, and executioner. I feel comfortable, like Dredd, sitting here saying to you, that's really bad.
If you want to skip ahead, if you do want to see Chillerama and you want to skip ahead, just watch the last two segments. Adam Green does one called The Diary of Anne Frankenstein. And Joe Lynch does this crazy zombie movie where people eat penises and stuff. But he also does the wraparound story. So, that's it.
I love that they have the wraparound story. That's just so silly. And it's like, of course there's a wraparound story. Yeah. Of course there is. Because if you were watching this without that, it would be weird.
So let me go back to this thing that I want to talk about with White House Down. Because I've noticed something, and I want to get your 2 cents.
In this recession, it's all I've got.
I've noticed something at the movies. This summer, I went to see G.I. Joe Retaliation back in March, where cities are leveled and everyone dies. I went to see Star Trek Into Darkness, where cities are leveled and everyone dies. I went to see Man of Steel, where cities are leveled and everyone dies. I went to see World War Z, where cities are leveled and everyone dies. I go to see White House Down. cities aren't leveled, although the Capitol building, I believe, is. A ton of people are shot and killed or blown up. Again, without spoiling anything, in White House Down, one of the bad guys is dispatched with one of those, like, helicopter guns? What do you call those? Like, that thing that Jesse Ventura shoots in Predator?
Yeah. Okay. I know what you're saying, yeah.
Channing Tatum, like, pops out of a tank and at point-blank range empties this helicopter gun into a human being, right? And this is after dozens of people have been shot and stabbed on camera. I have no problem with this. I like action movies. I like violent movies. But what I think is fucking crazy is the fact that it's a PG-13 movie. A guy gets a helicopter gun unloaded into him after being smashed with a tank at point-blank range in a PG-13 movie. And I had commented on this about World War Z, where thousands, if not millions, of people die in World War Z. We're shown shots of bodies being stacked in piles by bulldozers, just shoveling bodies. And it's a PG-13 movie. And I just don't understand what happened to an R rating.
Yeah, no, that's... I didn't know White House Down. White House Down, I haven't seen it, but I did like your review.
Thank you.
the tone of it, I know that there's violence in it, obviously. It's a Roland Emmerich movie. It's an action movie. But I thought with Jamie Foxx and Channing Tatum, the tone would be a little more fun. And I say fun in the 80s buddy cop vein. Like, yes, Tango and Cash is violent, but it's fun and goofy. You know, there's parts of it that are whatever. And if there's like – I mean, that is – like, I'm going back to Dread. I'm going to go back to Dread a couple times during this whole podcast.
All right, good.
It's a Dread theme. I just saw it, is what I'm saying. There's a couple sequences where, like, and that's a crazy violent movie. But it's also R.
Yeah.
It's a hard R. And,
yeah.
But there's, like, the stuff where they, like, they unload a gun into a person's face and it just, it disintegrates. And it's like, oh, that's jarring. But again, it's because of the CGI, it's not real, like, in Irreversible with the fire extinguisher or whatever.
When it was real.
Well, I know that guy, he is never acting. He is not acting again. I can't. I don't know. I you made a comment before, I think when World War Z, the preview, we've talked about that preview a lot. Now you've seen the movie and it's all your suspicions are confirmed, correct?
Yeah.
That it's just like a very dour, serious kind of, you know, whatever.
And also boring, like, and not very good.
This summer movie should be fun and exciting, and this preview ends with a hole in a plane being ripped open and people being sucked out. And that stuck with me. And last week during my awesome trailer column, I had featured some trailers put together by the fine people at Screen Junkies. And they put these – they're actually really, really funny. They're 4-minute-long trailers where they just – and it's funny because you could tell that they like the movies. But they're just ripping on the movies a lot and making a fake trailer for them. But they recently just came out with Independence Day, which we have a podcast on UKB, talk about that. And in Independence Day, they rip it apart and it's very goofy and you're laughing because, like, oh my God, all these things are true. By the very end of it, it's funny because they say, remember when, like, all this movie is ridiculous and people do die and buildings are exploded, whatever. But remember when movies were fun and kind of optimistic and had a speech and were just like, and goofy and like you excited and you cheered and you, I mean, I remember in 96 cheering for Independence Day. Like, we were in the theater, Woodfield 1 and 2, cheering.
Yeah. And rightfully so.
I don't remember doing that. You know, and again, I know the seriousness, I mean, I got to think it's just a phase. And I know this isn't your question about the ratings and whatnot, but I do think it's a phase that right now we're in the midst of Serious Town, where Man of Steel is very – and I know Man of Steel is a different kind of movie. Iron Man 3 is not serious at all. It's very goofy. That's Shane Black versus the kind of – not Zack Snyder, because I don't know what he is really. But
well, just visionary. That's what he is.
The Superman ethos being like, no, it's a serious – it's never been – he's never been a goof. You know, it's always been about good, evil, blah, blah, blah. But I have not seen Man of Steel. I was too busy watching Coffee. I don't know, though. I think that I mean, our country is obsessed with violence, and sex is still bad, but violence has always been good, and I think that it's just a matter of time before, you know, it's getting even worse.
Yeah, it's certainly not a new point that I'm making. I'm just shocked this summer, and I know, you know, basically almost anything that comes out in the summer is going to be PG-13 because it has to appeal to as wide an audience as possible, but it just seems like we're not even really trying at this point to determine what a rating should be. It's like everything gets a PG-13 and they can get away with as much as possible. Again, in White House Down, I guess they get away with it because there's not a ton of blood. But going back to Independence Day, yeah, a lot of people die at the beginning of that movie. It's sort of that generic destruction that's more in line with
more acceptable
Star Trek Into Darkness or even Man of Steel, where it's unnamed, no-faced people in buildings somewhere. You know, people definitely die in the Earth's destruction in Independence Day. Part of the reason why I think it's okay in Independence Day is that the rest of the movie is sort of about not taking revenge for that, but there is a
coming together to, you know, get to work together to this common cause. And like, it's the, yeah.
I mean, in Star Trek Into Darkness and in Man of Steel, all these cities are leveled and all these people are killed just as this weird afterthought in the climax. It's just this thing that happens while our characters fight it out. And it's crazy to me. Independence Day, it's a tragedy from which we rally behind and have to stop the aliens because they attacked us. It's the jumping off point for the rest of the movie.
Reminds me of one of my favorite movies, Collateral Damage, which is all these people are, just Collateral Damage, which reminds me of another favorite movie, Eraser. Go on.
So I just feel like White House Down could have been more in the spirit of an Independence Day, but some of the violence is so hardcore and like mean-spirited that it belongs in more of like The Last Boy Scout or Die Hard 2, where,
is,
you know,
Fast and Furious 6, R, or 13?
That's PG-13.
Okay, I was going to say that seems to me to be an R too, but again, you're appealing to the 13-year-olds out there and they got to make money.
Fast and Furious 6, I would argue, is sort of the tamest of the bunch because while there is violence, it's definitely more of sort of a PG-13 variety. I couldn't believe, especially in World War Z, it was offensive to me because you could tell that they were cutting around things to get a PG-13. There's a scene where somebody has to get their arm amputated and it's all happening off screen. And not that I needed to see it, but it's, you can't have it both ways. You know what I mean? You can't do the brutal amputation, but make it bloodless so everybody can see it. And same with White House Down, where this is definitely an R-rated movie that you've just slapped a PG-13 on. And for what purpose?
I want to speak of people wanting things both ways. I mentioned this in my little write-up of Pitch Perfect. I think that movie doesn't know what it wants to be, if it wants to make fun of the movie, or not the movie, I'm sorry, make fun of the genre of a cappella singing, or if it wants to take it seriously.
Which is that same bullshit that Bring It On did. It's like, isn't cheerleading stupid, but isn't it so fun?
Right. And it really drives me crazy because it's like you've got this movie
like
that
movie
people
drive
love, but
me
it doesn't
crazy.
Know what
I'm
it
sorry.
Wants.
Go ahead.
I had a big problem with it, which reminds me reminds me that I recently also saw the last half hour. I didn't bring this up earlier because I didn't see the whole movie, but this is playing on HBO. It's one of HBO's newest movies, The Watch.
Oh,
it's on HBO,
yeah.
And I watched the last half hour of it the other day. And that's a movie that has no fucking clue what it wants to be. I don't care about spoiling The Watch. Fuck The Watch. The Watch is not a very good movie.
It's really
even
not.
The half. Did you see the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. I saw it in the theater.
Did you talk about it on a previous podcast or write a review or anything on this movie? Because I'll just refer people to that. I don't need to
talk about
it. You
know what? I think the review that I wrote was for about.com. So,
okay. Yeah. Well, all I'll say is that, again, having only seen a half an hour of it, it seems to me to be like these funny people in quotes – in a movie about aliens, which was not advertised at all. And I realized the history surrounding the advertising of this movie was like, oh, this came out – it was originally called Neighborhood Watch, and it came out like around the time the tragedy in Florida happened with the person shot. And I get that they have to reconnoiter what they're trying to do. So it's called The Watch, but it's about aliens, so they're okay there. And everything else is the dumbest, stupidest thing. And I'm like, this isn't even like – Be a movie. I don't know what it's just. It's so. It takes itself so fucking seriously, and it's like. And then, but then at the same time, it's like, oh, to kill the aliens, you have to shoot it in the penis. Like what is this movie I'm watching?
That's funny.
Or kind of half watching the last half hour of. But that's my biggest issue, I guess, just to bring it home, is that I think a lot of movies want to have it both ways and don't know what they want to be, so they just are everything. You know,
right.
I respect a David Wayne. And I even made this comment in Pitch Perfect, like, there's jokes in that movie that are David Wayne-esque that belong in a Wet Hot American Summer or even Wanderlust, which I know I'm not a huge fan of, but it's definitely the movie it's trying to be, you know?
Right. The Watch is a terrible movie and reminds me that I think you could count the good, like, special effects comedies on one hand. I mean, it's like Ghostbusters, Men in Black.
Men in Black 3?
Then Men in Black 3, which what made me think of it was This is the End. I don't know that I would necessarily call that a special effects comedy, but I would include that on the list. And
sure,
as I may have talked about before on this podcast, I am a fan of Land of the Lost, which I'm a little bit alone on, although I think you like it too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Let me refresh my memory. That's it's starring
Will Ferrell and Danny McBride and Anna Friel and dinosaurs.
No, that's a movie that got it came out and bombed and
big
got written
time
off.
Bombed.
And
people hate
said,
that
this
movie.
Is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And you said, Doug, just you're not going to love it, but watch it. And I remember thinking, like, this is fun. Like, it's funny. There's some really funny stuff.
It's bizarre. Yeah. It's very
it's
much
completely bizarre. I think people don't know how to respond to it.
Yeah. It's
it
very much a
even
own thing. Yeah. But I would call that a good special effects comedy. But I think there are so few. And I was really hoping that The Watch would be one. And boy, it's not. Because again, you have four people trying to be each in their own movie. You know, we get Ben Stiller, and he's in his Ben Stiller movie. And Vince Vaughn is just fucking Jesus. Being Vince Vaughn, and Jonah Hill is maybe trying to do something different, but not
he's
necessarily.
He's trying, but he doesn't have the range, yeah.
And again, I remember when the movie came out that everybody had good, nice things to say about Richard Ayoade. Like, oh, he totally steals the movie. Every line he gets, he crushes it. And I don't remember feeling that way at all. I mean, he's not to blame for the movie sucking, but he's certainly not enough to save the movie.
Yeah. You earlier posed a question to me, a very serious, deep question about violence and movie ratings and RIP Jack Valenti and all this other stuff.
You're all like, The Watch.
I'm going to pose a popcorn question to you.
All right.
I'm watching Dread. I'm bringing it back to Dread 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The end of Dread ends, and I'm not sure how to – and this is a very new thought that I was thinking of as you were talking because I wasn't listening. I don't know how to say this, but I kind of like movies when they end with a voiceover reaffirming the mission of the movie. And I know
really?
If that makes any sense. I do. And I'm thinking, like, I think The Matrix does it to some extent. Starship Troopers does it all over the place. Like, we will defeat them. And Dread does it. And I'm like, I kind of fucking love it when a movie, like stuff goes down, people die, and the hero walks out, like, a little damaged but like reaffirmed and you know like I'm going to continue my mission and like the next chapter the next phase and it's like we're gonna fight and we're gonna win and the credits roll and I'm like yes it kind of like it's this weird Pavlovian thing I think in me where I'm like I think this movie's onto something
okay so you didn't ask a question
oh didn't I didn't I guess. Do you like that?
I don't. Yeah, right. I'm trying to think of. I'm sure there's for the few good examples you named. I'm sure there's a ton that are bad.
I disagree.
I'm sure in a good in a movie that I like. I mean, The Matrix. It's like I already liked The Matrix. So when the voiceover kicks in, I think, yeah, great, because everything has been awesome so far. My problem is a lot
same
of
with
times.
Starship Troopers.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
My problem is a lot of times when I hear voiceover. Especially at the beginning and the end of a movie, I tend to think, and Doomsday, the movie I talked about earlier, definitely has that. And the voiceover is from Malcolm McDowell, who plays a small part in the movie, so it makes no sense that he would be the one narrating it. I tend to think that it's there because they went back and added it in, where something was unclear, they didn't know how to get in or out of their movie, and so they went back in and added it. Now, I don't think that's always the case because I don't think in The Matrix they were like, oh no, we don't know how to end this thing. I think they knew that they wanted Neo to basically say, I'm coming for you fuckers and I'm going to disappoint. but I think in a lot of cases that it's an afterthought. And so as soon as I hear it, that's where my mind goes that, oh, they're trying to
Your
repair
mind doesn't
this.
Go like, this is, I was wrong. This is great. That's what I think.
Doug
I
is onto like, something.
This is really, really good.
I do like when Judge Dredd narrates a movie that I'm watching, regardless of what it is.
Judge Dredd, Sylvester Stallone, or Judge Dredd?
No, Carl Urban. Carl Urban.
Channeling, I don't know what, channeling Clint Eastwood, I guess?
Sure, I don't know.
everything is like this. Is it bold to take a role that like you don't see your face? And I know that's true to the graphic novel that like, or the comic strip, whatever.
Yeah.
That he never takes his helmet off, and obviously, in the original one from 95 or whatever,
he couldn't like take his helmet off fast enough.
Oh
man.
My God! It's like I am not defined by my helmet.
Which is what it says on Stallone's tombstone, because on July 2nd he died. On July 2nd, 2013. Yeah.
You know tragic. Who did just pass away in all seriousness?
Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
Exploitation star. I read that. And I'm like, how sad. And it just obviously my mind is so focused on exploitation this whole month, and it's really depressing and sad. And he was great. And by the way, it's funny that in our exploitation, you mentioned earlier that, by the way, that was the worst eulogy for anyone dying ever. Because I was totally.
Good.
Yeah, you think? All right, good. We can move on. You said like, yeah, we have all these broad categories like cars. There is like a category like Sid Haig. Good luck.
Yeah, right.
I love it. I love it.
And it's weird because there aren't that many sort of established exploitation stars. I mean, Pam Grier is really the obvious one, or Fred Williamson. And there are people who, you know, had entire careers working in just exploitation movies, but they're not necessarily people you would know by name. You know, and we had like last year we did Dick Miller already, and we did Pam Grier last year. So whatever. What I'm saying
Pam
is
Pam Grier deserves, I think, 30 stars of 30 Pam Griers of summer next summer. What do you think?
I'm going to watch Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I'm always disappointed though by how many people watch Ghosts of Mars. It's like, no,
there are so many other choices. You could watch Above the Law.
Just watch Jackie Brown. Just make it a Jackie Brown day.
When I say Above the Law, what are you supposed to say?
Law.
Thank you. You're Nico.
Toretti? Nico Toretti? Is that his name?
I think that sounds right. Let me go back to something that I had mentioned when I was talking about The Heat. And that is, I mentioned this idea of movie blind spots. And I haven't necessarily thought of a ton of mine, but buddy cop movies definitely would be one, because even a shitty buddy cop movie, I'm probably going to have an okay time. Are you aware of any sort of blind spots that you have where it's like, I like this even though I shouldn't just because it's this thing?
You know, it's when you said that earlier, I was like, oh, he's probably setting me up. So when he asked me later,
and
in the
I gave
podcast,
you probably 45 minutes. To come
I know.
Up with
and
it.
I'm like, I should come up with it. And then I quickly forgot because I was just so focused on Dread. And now here I am on the spot. I'm sure I do. Honestly, I know I have like a go-to actor or something that I'm like, this is going to be good because this person directed. I think a lot of times maybe directors, like I know a Quentin Tarantino movie is going to be good.
Well, but that's not a blind spot or a handicap. I was calling it a handicap, not a blind spot. Like Tarantino, you know, is going to be good. When I say a handicap, it's you end up liking something. Like there's certainly some teen movies, I think, that you would handicap because you just sort of like the genre.
Sure.
Where, you know, I'll say this, probably not as
I don't
good
know if this
as,
is – this is totally probably not what you're asking, but
oh,
I think maybe it is. No. The other day, 500 Days of Summer was on VH1, which is the worst fucking way to watch a movie because it's like 8 minutes of commercial followed by 4 minutes of movie and followed by Stevie TV is my point. So the movie came on, and I know it's been vilified on our website, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie with what's her name, Zooey Deschanel. A lot of people do not like this movie, including some staff members of this movie. I really, really love 500 Days of Summer. And when I was watching it, I was watching it with my wife and her sister who was in town. And I was saying like, oh, this movie's great. And right away, there's like the worst line ever. You know, like the stupidest, like most dumb, cliched, sappy, overwritten line. And I was like, and of course I go into damage control. I'm like, oh, that line's pretty bad. And I'm like, fuck it. And I was like, that line's horrible. And I still love it. I love this movie. So I think that might be kind of like a handicap where you're just like, you know, like, and again, you could even argue that that's kind of like in the vein of a teen romance type comedy. And I do love like those teen movies. I like war movies a lot. I like sports movies, believe it or not. Like if there's a sports movie, I mean, all the stories of sports movies are pretty much the same. But if it's done serviceably, I'm usually like, oh, that was good, you know?
Yeah.
And even though it's like there's no surprises. Except I'm not a fan of Rudy. Uh-oh. Lots of hate mail coming to Doug.
Yeah, people really love that movie. I have never seen
people
it.
People are crazy about that movie.
Yeah.
People love Rudy so much. Rudy is I think this is the second time I've used the word sweetly retarded on the podcast. He is like a man-child, again, second time I've used that, that people love this movie because it's, you know, inspirational. I'm sure, again, it's this nostalgia we've talked about a lot in the podcast too, that like they probably saw Rudy at a good time in their lives and now they have fond memories of it. Where I saw Rudy like probably 15 years after it came out and I'm like, this movie wasn't very good.
All right, let's do best worst because we haven't done it in so long, and because we don't do these.
Lay it on me.
If everything shows that often, we may have already done this one, so I apologize if this is a feckin' repeat. Yeah, feckin' piece of repeating shit. Christopher Nolan. Have we done Christopher Nolan before?
I think we have. Yeah.
Do you remember what you said?
I don't, but I can tell you right now, I saw Dark Knight Rises is on HBO.
A lot. It's on HBO a lot lately.
It's nonstop. That movie is not good. I'm going out on a limb and saying
I don't think
it
is
good.
Either, and I know so many people love it, and the most recent time I watched it, I was thinking, the people that love this movie really are apologists for it, right? They want to love it, and so they're projecting. And that's unfair. Like, people love the movies that they love. It's not for me to say that they're right or wrong to love it, but I don't see it.
I can say my favorite of his is The Dark Knight because I really do love that movie.
Yeah.
And my least favorite is The Dark Knight Rises, which, again,
I totally
subscribe
There's
to that.
There's only one
I think
word
that
separates them.
I know. So it's a very tricky thing when I'm in a sleep-induced coma. What? What am I talking about?
So
who are
alphabetically
you?
On your shelf, side by side, you're all like, this one's the best. Oh, this one's the worst.
But I have not seen Interstellar yet. Listen, my point is this. I think people are in such a high from The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight's great. And The Dark Knight is a very well-made, well-crafted, tight little movie that ends and has conclusions and has an arc that you can follow. Dark Knight Rises is a mess. There's too many characters. There's too many, like, things in prisons. There's too many jumping on ledges. And there's too many motorcycles that defy physics. Like, I do not like it when the motorcycle goes sideways and the wheels flip around. I know it looks cool, but if we're just, like, going by looks cool, I mean, can we please just pull my eyeballs out of my head? Because I'm done. I'm done with this world. The sweet release of eyeballs being pulled out of my head.
I would disagree with your assessment of The Dark Knight as being, like, tight. I like that movie a lot. I think it's a great movie, but that movie's also a little bit of a mess. In some ways, by design, it gets away with a lot of things because you can just keep pointing back to saying, well, it's the Joker and he's chaos, right? So it's okay that this is sort of a narrative mess, but it is. But that's okay because I think it's a great movie.
I know your favorite is Inception. Favorite Christopher Nolan movie is Inception. I'm going to guess your least favorite is The Dark Knight Rises, probably, just because you've said...
Unfortunately, yeah, I think so.
Well, he's got a great... I mean, the thing is, he made The Prestige. I recently watched that. I mean, I talked about it on a podcast like a year ago. It's great. Batman Begins is tight. I have not seen Insomnia. Memento's great. I don't think I've seen Following either, so...
Following's good. I mean, I don't love Following. And I actually think Insomnia is a really good kind of just straightforward cop movie.
Can you please do your Pacino on the podcast?
From Insomnia?
No, from anything.
I don't do a very good Pacino.
Are you kidding? You did a Pacino that had me peeing in my pantaloons.
I just kept yelling, give me all you got, which I already did on the Heat podcast.
No, it's going to be like, you got your head straight up. Whatever that is. I don't know what that is. I can't do the impersonation.
Because he's got a great ass. And you got your head all the way up in it.
That's it. That's the cadence I love. Sorry, you're my performing
give me
monkey.
All you got.
Perform, monkey, perform.
Give me all you got.
All right, so what's your next best worst?
Jesus, man. David O. Russell.
David O. Russell. I can easily say I think my favorite is, and this probably might not hold up, but my favorite's got to be Three Kings because it's the best. And I remember that's the movie that I like at a time I was in college. 99 was a great year for movies. And this was just one that came out along with what else? Fight Club came out. American Beauty came out that year. A lot of great movies. Even though I have not seen American Beauty in a long time, and I'm sure it is not as good as I remember.
I'm pretty sure it is not. Although I do like – okay, before I saw American Beauty, I will say there was – I felt like there was this curtain that was over Suburbia.
Oh, jeez. So I got to say I'm still sticking with Three Kings. I just pulled up his filmography.
I would say that's the right answer.
He's not made a ton. I know Adam Riske loves Silver Linings Playbook. I saw it. I liked it. The Fighter, I remember watching, like, not wanting to see it, and you see it, and it's like, this is good, and you don't ever really want to see it again because that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember I own I Heart Huckabees. I've seen it once, maybe twice. I remember not loving it. So I'm going to say that's my least favorite because people will say Flirting with Disaster is not very good, and I like that movie.
Flirting with Disaster is a great movie. People that think that movie is not very good should be punched in the tummy.
And I've not seen Spanking the Monkey, so.
Spanking the Monkey is problematic.
It's also like
it suffers movie, from that, right? Hey, it's the mid-90s and Sundance is a thing and here's this movie. I would say Three Kings is my favorite, and I would probably say I feel bad about this, but I would say Silver Linings Playbook might be my least favorite, although maybe Spanking the Monkey.
Well, Spanking the Monkey, I almost feel is exempt because it's just like it's a first movie. It's like a film student kind of like, I'm making this for a festival, and it's very much of its time.
In some cases, the first movie is the best one. The best one.
Like, give me an example.
I don't know. I feel like when we did this for James Cameron, I think I named the first Terminator, which is really his first movie, as his best. I don't know, but maybe I'm wrong.
Have you seen T2 last February? Because that movie might be his best
movie. T2 does kick some dick.
And it holds up, and it's awesome in 2013.
Now, I know you haven't seen all of... No, you have seen all these movies. Here's the thing. We do this game so infrequently that we probably are naming a lot of the same people again, and our answers may be different. So if you're somebody with a crazy photographic memory of F this movie, and I'm sure those people exist... you may realize that we are contradicting ourselves, but that's part of the fun of the game, that on a given day, our answers can be different.
Oh.
Have we done David Fincher before?
That one doesn't ring a bell. I mean, that one. Panic Room might be my least favorite. No, Benjamin Button. Man, this guy's all over the place. I'm just gonna go down the main movies.
Right.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Very kind of hit and miss.
Bad.
Social Network.
Good.
I like. Right. Benjamin Button.
Bad.
Zodiac.
Good.
Panic Room.
Good.
Really?
I like it.
I have to see it again. I have not seen that since the early 2000s.
And to be honest, you probably don't need to see it again.
Fight Club.
Good.
The Game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, The Game. I have this memory of The Game, and I like rented it and watched it with my wife. I'm like, this movie is going to blow your mind. And it's like, this movie is – I got to not – ever recommend
again,
something that
people,
I saw when I was a teenager.
People passionately love that movie. I'm just not one of them.
Seven, good.
Good.
Alien 3.
Bad.
Okay, so I'm going to say Benjamin Button's the worst, and, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen Fight Club, and I'm totally the film school guy in the glossary that's the list. But Fight Club is still, like, I mean, it's you know, we should do a show on Fight Club and American Beauty and everything from 1999.
Yeah, some of those movies I don't think have aged well. I don't know how well Fight Club has aged. It's been a couple years since I've seen it. But
well, that's what I'm saying. Like it's
yeah.
been, but I remember loving it and kind
yeah,
of breaking this new ground and being pretty great. So okay, so,
so
what's your
I'm with Fight Club
and Benjamin Button, yeah.
I would probably agree that Benjamin Button is my least favorite, although Alien 3 I think is not very good, but I would certainly watch it before I would watch Benjamin Button, so
do you factor in also that Alien 3 came out, I mean, such a long time ago, he was such like, he hadn't made
it. It wasn't really
yet.
His movie, too, that it got
right.
taken away from him. Yeah,
okay,
I
didn't know that. But I'm just saying, even like,
yeah.
not even that, but what about like how it's, I mean, he became such a different director
sure.
and kind of, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's not really his movie, so it's not really fair to hold him responsible for that. So I would say Benjamin Button worst. Best, I'm going to say Zodiac.
Zodiac is such an interesting movie for me because when I had – I can't even make sounds. I was expecting something different when I saw it. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, this isn't – and it leaves you very unsatisfied,
yeah.
which is kind of the point.
Yeah.
And I really need to see it again because I know it's probably grown in a lot of people's estimations and it's probably – a really great movie, but I remember seeing it being like, this let me down. And I was like upset.
I think Zodiac, and I could be wrong about this. I think Zodiac is going to be one of the few movies that he's made, certainly up to this point in his career, that doesn't date. That I think Zodiac's going to be kind of timeless. I think Seven, which I still really like, I think is already kind of dated. And part of that is because it was a little bit ahead of its time in terms of the style in which it's made. But it's very mid-90s, it feels. And there were a lot of movies that then imitated Seven, so that's part of why I think we categorize that movie as being part of the mid-90s. But I think it's a little bit dated. I think Fight Club might not have dated well. I think Social Network right now feels great and current. I wonder if it's going to feel dated down the road, or if it's going to be the kind of thing that we could point to that even though it's so specific to a certain point in history, where it's almost like a document of that time in history. So it won't feel dated. It will feel more like a time capsule.
Do you think Zodiac, though, doesn't suffer from that because it is like it's, you know, about the 70s for the most part in the 80s? Like,
yeah, probably to a large extent that it's set in the past already. And so it doesn't date, but its themes are also a little bit more
universal.
Yeah. I don't know. You want to do one more?
Sure. Lay it on me, Holmes.
Shit.
Or am I supposed to find one for you?
I mean, it would be nice once in a while.
I'm making you do all the work.
You really are.
Would Penelope Spheeris be a good choice? I'm just kidding.
Best Wayne's World, worst Little Rascals. Moving on.
How about Amy Heckerling for you?
Oh, God. Best is Clueless, even though I love Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And worst is that fucking Vamps movie. That was like a nightmare. I know your
so
best
brought...
would be Loser, but...
Yeah, well, it's great. I mean, yes, it's got all the actors that I love in it. Before the podcast started, I was waiting for the right time to connect via with you.
Yeah.
Let me stop right there and maybe cut this out. I should not say that. Before the podcast, I happened to catch maybe 7 minutes of Look Who's Talking on Nick at Night.
Oh, yeah, that movie's good.
And here's the thing about Look Who's Talking. First of all, it's a ridiculous movie. I mean, good, sure. I didn't watch enough of it to even get, kind of have an opinion in 2013. But the funniest thing is, and I saw the scene where the baby is born. In Die Hard, Bruce Willis is, you know, he came from, and you could speak more to this than I can, but he came from a comic background, kind of like Moonlighting and stuff. And he was in Die Hard, and all of a sudden he's like this kind of interesting hero that's he can do action stuff, but he's also kind of goofy. And some of the goofier lines, I've been told or I've heard that some of them were ad-libbed. And some of them you could tell are ad-libbed because they're the worst, correct?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is what a TV dinner feels like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, in Look Who's Talking, I feel like they just said, just riff, Bruce, riff. Because I swear to God, every time they cut to the stupid doll baby in the purple cocoon womb, it's just him being like, whoa, what's that bump? I don't understand what's going on. It is
Now I know what a TV dinner feels like.
I mean, I swear to God, I was waiting for that to happen. He's like, what's that light down there? And then he's born. He's like, whoa, what's all this about? Don't drop me. Don't drop me. Don't drop me. I swear to God, it's like he's watching the footage that shot of the baby and like brainstorming with like himself. I don't even know who else can come up with these gems. And it's the most ridiculous thing in the world. But everyone should watch Luke Who's Talking.
I do like that movie. All right, I got one more for you. Here's one you're not going to see coming that you might have to IMDb as we speak. He's got a movie coming out in a couple weeks, and that is a director by the name of James Mangold.
Oh, geez. I've heard the name. Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Let me give you a couple little facts about him.
Patterns.
Born in New York City.
Boom.
He doesn't have many many films.
All right.
This is a weird filmography.
He's got
a couple
resume.
Of big ones.
He's sort
Night
of made
Day,
one of each.
310 to Yuma, Walk the Line, Identity, Kate and Leopold, Girl Interrupted, Copland, and Heavy. What the fuck is up with James Mangold?
One of the things I think is interesting about him, he's not sort of an auteur in any sense, but he's made a movie in sort of every genre.
He is also the director of The Wolverine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which looks like a garbage movie.
Night and Day is not very good. 310 to Yuma, I might need to see again. I saw it at a friend's house.
I can't remember the name of the TV, but I want to make the joke. Yeah, there it is.
A friend of mine, remember this like in the late 2000s, there was a gimmick that Panasonic put out that like, your TV's X size. We can make it Y size by determining the primary light in a specific scene and broadcasting that light on your wall to make it bigger. Well, what idiot bought this TV? Well, one of my friends did. Actually, my wife's friend, but he's not an idiot. he's just not very smart for buying that TV. So I saw 310 to Yuma on an Ambilight set, and it was very bizarre. Walk the Line, Identity. I don't know if I know what Identity is.
Sure you do. It's like the 10 Little Indians with John Cusack. They all stop at a motel, and people are dying off one by one. John Cusack, Amanda Peet, Ray Liotta, Rebecca De Mornay, Duvall.
Worst.
Surely you've seen it.
Okay, worst is Night and Day.
Okay.
Best is or Copland. Copland's not that good.
Mm.
Best is, you know, I just saw this again recently, Walk the Line.
Yeah.
It's his most polished, his most serious entry. It's definitely flawed, but I still like it despite Reese Witherspoon being in it.
I'm going to say his worst is Kate and Leopold. And his best, God, I'm going to have a hard time picking a best.
Although Girl Interrupted is still, that's definitely an Academy movie, you know,
I don't love that movie. I actually like Copland, and Copland is very messy and very flawed, but
I want to love Copland.
It's such a good,
Copland,
like,
for Christ's sake.
It's such a good actor's showcase. Okay. Everybody in it is somebody interesting and that you like, and they're all good in it, including Stallone. But I don't know that it's his best.
No, it's not his best. Yeah, no.
I might say, I might say 310 to Yuma is his best. And I mean, it's hard to be passionate about that movie, but I have a hard time being passionate about any of these movies, even though to one degree or another, I kind of like all of them, including Night and Day.
Including Kate and Leopold?
I saw Kate and Leopold once in 2001. I don't remember any of it. I just remember it being generic. But Hugh Jackman was charming. but it's a little too much, like, time travel-y romance. And not the good kind. Not the kind in The Lake House. Night and Day, though, is a movie I always want to like more than I do. And I rewatched it a couple months ago. Yeah, that's right. Whereas you were like, I got to put on Minority Report. I thought, I have to go down to the basement and pull Night and Day off my shelf and watch it.
It's so funny because you are so busy. For those who don't know Patrick, he's got like 8 jobs, 2 kids, 4 wives. I don't know how he handles it all. I don't know how he juggles it all. And he's watching like, I'm going to watch Night and Day.
Yeah.
And it boggles the mind.
The first hour of Night and Day, I would argue, still actually really works in sort of a bird on a wire, like early 90s way. but the second, it goes on way too long and it gets more and more convoluted and kind of boring as it goes on. But I actually think the first hour of Night and Day is pretty good.
My biggest indictment of Night and Day is that it's completely forgettable and just like waste of time. I saw it and I'm like, oh, it's got Tom Cruise. And I'm one of the few people I feel like who doesn't hate Tom Cruise. I think Tom Cruise gives good performances and I like him in movies. I know he's crazy in real life and whatever, but, and I'm not even a Cameron Diaz hater, although she's not making it easy for me to not be that. But this movie is just a complete, like, what am I watching? And there's some interesting ideas. And I like the one scene, like there's a scene in the diner where I think it's in the preview, like where he threatens the guy or the guy is like, was this guy bothering you? And he's just like, you know, it's good, but it's.
Is that where he says, I shoot me, then her or something?
Yeah. And he's like very apologetic. I'd rather watch 10 Jack Reachers than a Night and Day again is my point. Jack Reacher's good.
Night and Day is like a Jack Reacher prequel. All right. I guess that's
enough. It's called Night and Day it's like the guy's, the people's name.
But Day isn't anything. That's his name is Night. Day is nothing. It's the worst title. I think it was originally called Wichita, which is a much better title. You know, like Holliston.
on FearNet. Gotcha.
All right. So I guess that'll do it for us this week.
I want to say I really enjoyed Junesploitation. I'm really, really thankful for all those people who participated. I think that it was fun for us. I hope it was really fun for you guys. We promise. We like to do a couple things a year. We have the Scary Movie Month in October, the Fest in February, so we want to do something in the summer. So we might mix it up next year, but this was actually really successful, and if we get positive feedback, I think we'll keep on keeping on.
I agree with everything you just said, and I can't believe that the next sort of big flagship event is already Scary Movie Month in just a couple months.
Yeah, it's only 3 months away, and it's crazy. I mean, summer is already over, aside from The Wolverine not being released yet. You know, James Mangold's the Wolverine.
I think I'm going to have a new worst for James Mangold. I think I will like the Wolverine less than Kate and Leopold.
I love that, like, you watch a preview and, oh, this is such a big summer for movies. And the Wolverine comes on, and you're like, and any other, well, not any other year, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Wolverine movie, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then this is just like, oh, and shoot me in the brain. I'd rather, yeah. I want to see Fast and Furious 6. And yeah. I did.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes to all of that. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. You can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you have suggestions for future shows or feedback on this show, you want us to do more of these F Everything shows. I'm guessing you don't, but we hope to hear from you soon. Happy 4th of July.
We'll do them anyway.
Didn't I promise you fireworks? We'll see you guys next week.
And RIP Sylvester Stallone. We'll be right back.